Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, it's good to see you alive. Sent you a wellness check the other night because I was partying my ass off and I was worried that you were not. You were at the same party as me. I just didn't see you the whole night.
We went to a conference. Ben, one of the most dangerous things you can do in Star Trek, we did in real life. We went to the Maximum Fun Conference, is its full name.
Yeah, the ultimate Maximum Fun Conference. And we came back alive.
Yeah, and kind of the, I would call it the centerpiece event of the whole thing is the party, right? The Dan Deacon dance party, the DDDP.
The triple DP.
I mean, it's an amount of DP that is a surprising amount for anything associated with Max Fun. Yeah, we were both at the same party, but it was a big party. And
it was a big party.
I saw you and you didn't see me. I was kind of dealing with some strange bouts of anxiety at the time.
No way.
Yeah, I was like, I think one of the great regrets of our tour was that we weren't able to really spend a lot of time with our friends at DeSoto in all the cities that we usually like to do. We usually like to hang back after, maybe do a little partying before on an off day or whatever.
Right.
But this really felt like the first time being in a large number of people, like mixed company style.
Yeah.
Where I was really feeling it. So with the help of a gummy and some drinking.
Drugs can make you feel good.
I was made comfortable. And also like the companionship of some great friends of DeSoto all around. They were big fun.
Yeah.
What happened to me at that party specifically was I would get in the drink line and the drink line was like 10 people long. I don't want to throw too much shade on the gentle, beautiful souls that comprise the attendees at Max FunCon, but don't get up to the front of the bar line and ask for the 10-ingredient drink. I saw way too many fucking crazy drinks coming out of the front of that bar.
Oh, man. They weren't ordering off the signature cocktail menu?
Didn't look that way to me. A lot of milk-based beverages, too. I got to say, like a ton of dairy drinks.
This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultraviolence.
Anyway, I would get in this line and then I'd be like, fuck it, man. I'm going back to the cabin where me and Ben have a bunch of liquor, which is right next door. So I would pop out, go next door, fill up my cup, come back, hang out with another group. Yeah. Pop out when my drink was done, get another drink, come out and do that. And that was kind of my rinse and repeat for almost 2 hours until I went to bed around midnight.
Wow.
But you were a social butterfly. You were all over the place. You were in a different spot every time I saw you.
Well, the dance floor drew the majority of my attention, which was a lot of fun. And I was really appreciative that people were staying masked up inside.
Mm-hmm.
But the real challenge for me was that for some reason I decided as a bit at the beginning of the night that I just wasn't going to put a glass down if I finished a drink.
Uh-huh.
All I do is fits.
No matter what.
This started with a glass that just had water in it, but pretty soon I had like 6 or 7 glasses in one arm and then, you know, one remainder in my left hand that, you know, was an active drink. And it was really amusing me, but I think it was setting some people off. Like, hey, man, can I help you with that stuff?
Is it a bit if no one else knows it?
It was for my own amusement. But the thing I realized...
I think the answer is yes, is what I'm saying.
I think so, yeah. But the thing I realized as I was putting them all down finally at the end of the dance party portion of the proceedings...
Were you dancing on the dance floor carrying the glasses?
Yeah, absolutely.
Were you wet? Were you wettened by the condensation or whatever?
A tiny bit, but not so much so that it was causing a problem. Uh-huh. But when I put them all down, I was like, I can count exactly. I know which of these were buffers. I know how many actual drinks I've had.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've never left a party knowing how many actual drinks I had.
Wow.
I only saw you when you had a couple in your arms. So,
yeah.
So what was the count by the end of it?
I think my final count was 8. But 3 of them were buffers, and I felt like that was a pretty good ratio.
It is a good ratio. The water's going to save you, especially when you're having a bunch of milk cocktails.
Which is what we were drinking.
You know, the bartender was one person that did appreciate the bit. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
He offered to unburden me, and then I said, no, that's cool, man. And I, ordered a buffer drink. They had a buffer drink right there on the signature drink menu, which I thought was really cool.
Did you ever hear what planet the bartenders came from?
No, they were really beautiful.
I was just going to say, I don't think it's speaking out of school at all to say that they were extraordinarily beautiful bartenders at Max OneCon this year to a distracting extent.
Yeah, they seemed like they might be a couple also because mm-hmm. they kind of stuck together the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you in that group?
Yeah.
I mean, for a time, that was a strategy for you and me.
Yeah. All these not 10 out of 10s need to stay away from us.
Yeah. You and me, Lake Arrowhead 4s.
Yeah, yeah. At best.
4 is good. 4 will relocate your house fairly efficiently.
I don't know. Do you get better looking in the higher altitude? A high altitude, low oxygen environment? I bet you do. That's what happened.
We got up to 4. We got all the way up to 4. Lofty heights for you and me.
The Paris BLT effect on our other hit podcast.
Am I making any sense here?
It was a great fun event. We taught a cocktail class together.
Oh, you taught it. I was the teacher's assistant. You did a great job once again.
Well, you can't teach people how to drink without a little TNA.
I was filling the enormous shoes of Chris Bowman.
Yeah.
The usual teaching assistant on that class.
And we had just a great time hanging with friends of DeSoto. We talked to a lot of people who enjoy the show, and it was really fun to just like get lunch with folks that laugh at the same crap we laugh at, you know?
Miriam Friends of DeSoto at Max FunCon this year. It felt like more than ever.
Yeah, we saw a lot of Greatest Gen t-shirts. We saw a Drunk Shimoda shirt. We saw a Kern shirt. We saw a The Warrior, The Legends shirt.
I remember seeing a couple of those, which I definitely would have bet against.
Yeah, that might be the highest concentration of Warrior, The Legends shirts they've ever been in one place at a time.
Yeah. Pretty great. Pretty great hang. The last one, from what we hear.
Yeah. At the very end, Nick White, the former editor of Bullseye, and I got up and presented Jesse with a little memento commemorating I think there were 14 or 15 Max FunCon Wests and at least a few Easts. And, you know, it's been a big part of my life for the last 15 or so years going
really
to
has.
Max FunCon. And you've been to a lot of them as well.
It's true.
And it was really touching to commemorate the end of a good thing, you know, all good things. And this was no exception.
It really made me feel good feelings about Jesse again, who moments before had smashed my nuts when he pulled you up on stage for a segment on Live Jordan Jesse Go at me is how he did it.
He really did.
Total bastard move by Jesse there.
Well, I was sitting on the aisle. You had the seat, over toward the wall. So it was just easier for me to get up there.
Guess so. Yeah. But he didn't have to throw it in my face like that. Anyway, I'm with you, man. Long live Max von Kahn.
Yeah.
It will be missed.
True. Do you want to get into today's episode of Strange New Worlds, mon frere?
Yeah, I think I do. Boy, speaking of places without suffering, I wasn't feeling too much at Max von Kahn for most of it. Let's see how people feel about Strange New World Season 1, Episode 6, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach.
Did you see this new, like, Star Trek logo at the beginning of this?
Is that going to be like the NFL shield that appears that says any reproduction or rebroadcast without the express written consent of Paramount Plus is prohibited? Like, that's sort of what it felt like.
It did kind of feel like that. Yeah, I thought it was also just kind of a strange thing that it seems to have been introduced. I guess I don't actually know. Maybe they've been playing this on the app and I've only seen screeners, but it was the first I'd seen of it. So it stuck out to me. Should I check to see if they're playing it on the app right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
We're going to make podcast history right here on videotape as Ben turns on his television during the show.
We're going to see what happens when a normie watches Strange New Worlds.
Everyone watching the stream will see over Ben's left shoulder, he's using his Apple TV, his Applet V.
So we get the Paramount Plus logo when you launch the app.
Uh-huh.
You don't get the Star Trek logo there.
No.
Ooh, I wonder if they're playing it before episodes of Voyager also.
I watched an episode of Voyager just today and it did not happen.
Didn't happen. Okay. So should I just put the first episode of Strange New Worlds and see what happens?
Do it.
All right. Okay, we got Paramount Plus logo.
Uh-huh.
This is a Paramount Plus original. Yeah, it's doing the thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What the hell?
How about that?
Nobody told us about this.
It's the new thing.
I guess so, yeah. I haven't fired it up on the actual app because we've been getting the screeners.
Yeah. Also, the app is terrible.
Yeah, the screener app, notably better interface than the, you know, user-facing version.
I love how the screener's like, hey, do you want to be logged in for the next 30 days? And I'm every time checking that box to say yes.
I do.
Yes, I would like that.
I'd like to be logged in for 30 days.
And every fucking time I have to log in.
Hey, well, edit that out, whoever's editing this episode. Yeah, we think that the screener app is great and the Paramount Plus app is even better.
Yes, Ben. You are correct. And as I hold up this newspaper showing today's date, I also want to say that I am being treated well.
What's that rhythmic blinking you're doing, Adam?
Are you hearing any rhythmic hammering that happens to be going on outside my window?
Yeah, what's going on out there? Some fucking?
Well, we've set up shop next to a noted podcaster's home where we will be disrupting the recording all afternoon.
This episode opens with Uhura and Pike on a turbo lift heading to work. Uhura, sore from combat training. She's doing a rotation in the security team.
Any Jim Shimoda will tell you, you got to stretch, Uhura.
Yeah.
Got to stretch out those shoulders especially.
Yeah.
Maybe you get in the wall of the turbo lift and you kind of put a hand on a wall and then kind of rotate your body, kind of open it up a little bit. You know?
Yeah. Open that heart chakra.
Yeah.
We played softball in the morning at Max FunCon. I'm still a little sore off of that softball game, which is very embarrassing to me.
I'm really glad you brought it up to the hitter of the winning home run.
It's time to play a little softball.
Mm.
This guy over here.
Mm.
It didn't make my calves any less sore the next day, though. That that like quick twitch energy is a totally different kind of strength than I'm used to using.
How many times did you come home in the game?
Oh, you mean like leaving to go get another drink and then going back to the game? Is that how you mean that question?
No, I mean like how many times
did I score?
You round the bases? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think as I remember it, I went 3 for 4.
Wow, pretty good.
And I think I touched home place a couple of times. Home place is what you call it in softball.
There's no place like home. Mm-hmm.
I got 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. Man, that game was fun.
It was really fun. It was a good game.
And you were good, man. You were batting from both sides. You were an ambidextrous.
I'm a switch hitter. I got on base both righty and lefty.
Yeah. That's a more impressive feat than my home run, I think.
Yeah, he swings both ways.
I barehand fielded a ball, which was really exciting until I didn't get it to first base to cut off the runner.
It feels like if you haven't played softball for a long time, the batting comes to you faster than the fielding.
Yeah, totally. Because fielding is about instincts and remembering where people are relative to you and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Everyone knows this. We're not telling anyone anything they don't already know.
Friends of DeSoto are just screaming at their podcast, get to the fucking episode!
Isn't it weird and fun to play sports?
The system that they're in, the Magellan system, is a place that Pike has a little bit of history. He did a rescue mission here 10 years ago, rescued somebody from a pulsar.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of history.
He's not usually rescuing people from rhythmic things. He's usually the one doling them out, right?
Mm. What do you think about the fact that Pike has an impression of Lieutenant Noonien Singh also?
I love it.
A Rigelian tiger pounces with no warning.
I mean, I feel like that is a really risky territory to tread if you are a superior officer.
Sure. There's I think what you're getting at is the power disparity there between them.
Yeah.
But also,
if the doors to the turbo lift open a little bit early, somebody's feelings are going to get really badly hurt.
Yeah. La'an doesn't display many feelings or hasn't yet.
Yeah.
And I imagine she would just haul off and kick Pike's ass if she were upset by anything.
Her two emotions are neutral and roundhouse.
Yeah, so in what direction is the power flowing in that relationship, I think is the question. Remains to be seen.
Anyways, they get up there, Uhura gets hazed a little bit, and then they're suddenly in a rescue situation. Two ships are scrapping, one is getting shot at and has grapples being attached to it. Pike gets on the blower and explains to the attacking ship, hey, listen, I don't know what you guys are set tripping about, but those guys asked for help and I am obliged to provide it. So maybe knock it off with your grapples.
We meet a new character in this scene. I'm almost positive we haven't seen Ensign Shocker before. Ensign Shocker is working a Uhura station while she's off learning security and tactical. And Shocker moves his three-fingered hands around until he's able to make the hail happen for Pike.
Yeah. The buttons on the bridge of the Enterprise famously unlabeled. So you have to come up with mnemonics to remember two on the pink buttons and one on the stink button.
Yeah.
No response, sir.
Yeah, it's too bad. Ensign Shocker drives around a shuttle with a sticker that tells everyone he's into not great stand-up comedy.
Which is strange to see paired with a Calvin praying sticker.
This is a fun moment because Pike's hey guys, cut it out. And a teacher stopping two kids from scrapping on a playground, they'd start punching the teacher. But because these are little kids, the little punches don't do anything to the Enterprise. And so Pike is hey, can you do that thing where you shoot them, but without hurting them? And when Uhura targets the ship's phasers at the grapple hook ship, it yelps like a dog. Did you get this weird sound?
I did, yeah. There's a jerk from the extremely whack phasers on this ship still have a ton of recoil, I think.
Yeah.
So it jerks itself into a more dangerous path and takes a much harder hit. I was just yelling at the screen, maybe don't put the cadet that doesn't have a lot of combat experience on the phasers when you're doing something really delicate like this.
Yeah, that's true. Pike's management style is not necessarily putting people in positions to succeed. It's just, throwing a baby in a swimming pool.
Yeah.
I've heard they swim naturally.
So the one ship starts kind of descending toward the surface of the moon, and the ship that asked for their help is asking to be beamed aboard because their life support is failing. I also thought it was a little weird that they didn't grapple or tractor the crashing ship before it crashed.
Yeah, it's hanging all this grapple. it seems totally plausible that you could snag one of those guys.
Yeah. I don't know why they didn't. They're just like, all right, well, we'll go meet our guests who are about to beam over.
I'll tell you why, Ben. Not useful for the story.
So down in the transporter bay, a trio of aliens beam aboard, and Pike actually knows one of them.
Lieutenant Pike?
And Laura?
Pike's got a face here. Pike is nostalgically smitten.
Mm-hmm. Allura, this red-haired lady with some kind of side of eye loaf.
Can I tell you that I started calling her Laura in my notes because that's sort of how Pike pronounces it because he's so nervous and smitten?
Laura and I met years ago.
I think that's what we'll call her going forward.
Uh-huh.
He's really tongue-tied with her. Like, yeah. He is like me talking to a girl in middle school tongue-tied.
That kind of crushing where you can hardly be proud of what you do or where you're from or anything at all about you. Like, he can barely tell her that he's the captain of the ship.
Because I'm a captain, so.
Yeah, he's wearing a gold shirt, for Christ's sakes. He can't even, he has no confidence in the presence of this woman.
The previous five episodes, I think, load up Una's line here with some weight that ordinarily, I think if you were just popping into this episode, you'd see like, oh yeah, number one, running interference, good job, like being the professional. But I feel like she kind of does this at Pike in a way that I think you'd only really appreciate if you'd watched all the eps up until now. They got a real fun relationship.
Allow me to take you to the ready room to debrief.
And she chooses not to smash his nuts publicly. Like, she just allows this awkwardness to happen, and that's sufficient.
Rebecca Romijn does so much nonverbal acting in this scene that is really fun. Like,
yeah.
I love the way that they frame this, too. Like, she's right in the center of it while Pike and Laura are having their conversation. So you can just enjoy watching Una take this all in and do the math on what's going on between these two.
Is Una the only character wearing a gold uniform with the black, I want to say gusset, but that's not the part of the tunic, right? Like under the armpits.
Oh, the side part. Yeah. I don't know what that's called.
That seems to be a unique version of the uniform.
It looks a little bit like the scant from TNG.
Right. Yeah. After the theme, we learn how far back Pike and Laura go. 10 years is the answer.
Yeah.
We also meet her companions on the transporter pad. We've got an elder Kamal and a boy.
A holy figure.
Which side?
Chosen at birth by lottery.
And this elder is acting very awkwardly around the child. And he describes himself as his father in strictly the biological sense.
Pike is like, cool, so you don't pay child support. Interesting. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny how a term like that kind of frames a person as a dirtbag.
It does. Yeah. That guy you're immediately suspicious of.
Yeah. One father you're not suspicious of at all is in Six Bay. Mabenga is reading to his daughter.
Yeah.
And God damn it, he's crossed up the chapters again.
He just read me the same exact chapter twice in a row.
Yeah, Dad, God!
I thought about this when we heard that he was, like, beaming her out of the buffer only periodically and always reading a storybook to her. I was like, I guarantee that dude is rereading parts of that book that he didn't realize he just did.
Hey, Mabenga, I use a bookmark?
It's revolutionary.
What's going on over there?
Is a 16th century invention too good for the 23rd century?
I mean, if you don't have a bookmark and you own the book, I guess you could dog-ear one of the pages. Just as good.
Yeah. Re-replicate it to get it nice, like that gum from the other episode.
That's right.
He's got his daughter and one book in the pattern buffer so that he can he can unfuck it when he's done reading it to her.
If you're checking out books from the replicator library, do you think it's easier to just materialize the book with just the chapter you're on? As if you tore out the chapters you'd already read.
Yeah, there was a kid in my college who would break the chapters of textbooks up and then like rebind them so that he didn't have to carry all the heavy books in his bag.
Oh, God.
And I was like, that's like a $95 book. You're not going to be able to return it now.
Don't say his name. I bet it would be familiar to anyone who watches the news. He always introduced himself using three names.
Yeah, it was weird.
This is a bummer because...
Dude, I figured it out. I know why he lost track. She beams out on a timer. It probably beams the book out too. So he loses his space. He doesn't have time to put a bookmark in when it's mid-transport.
But in this scene, is the book open in his hands and wouldn't it rematerialize?
No, it's...
Yeah, in Strange New Worlds Season 1, Episode 6, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. I almost didn't need to say the title. I think we all know what the title is here, right? Because we all bought tickets to a Star Trek convention.
Everybody has that memorized, yeah.
Anyway, I take great umbrage with the show not depicting how the book looks when Mbenga's daughter is beamed away into the pattern buffer. What happens to that book? Is it put into the buffer closed? Is it put in open? Does Mbenga have to put it up on his bookshelf with his medical titles? I will take your answer off the air.
Get a light.
She beams away. Mbenga gets called out to look at this kid, and we cut up to kind of an after-action interrogation of Laura, who is explaining that these attackers were trying to kidnap that little boy and get a ransom. The little boy, extremely important to the Society of Magellus, and they would literally pay anything to get him back.
Yeah.
And Pike is like, anything?
Yeah, sounds pretty smart by the other guys.
Yeah, yeah. Big payday for them. She can point a finger at an alien colony that's... She describes it as long abandoned, which I guess means cut off from other people. I mean, spoiler alert, it's them. But describing it as an abandoned colony kind of maybe felt like a little bit of a tipping of her hand.
Right. In an episode where there are quite a few hand tips and quite a lot of deception, right? Like, I think the deception begins earlier in the episode, but at this table, I feel like when you call something science service sacrifice, that is a elegant way to cover up something strangely non-scientific and religious seeming by the end of it, you know?
Yeah. How big of a sacrifice are we talking about?
Yeah. Are we talking about the sort of sacrifice where there's an altar involved or just like you kind of do work for a number of hours every week until you get credit?
With the three S's, are they all the same size of font or is one of them like really big compared to the other two?
Can I just propose maybe the logo of Science Service Sacrifice are like three cool S's and kind of a triangle?
Wow, tight.
This is not a meeting that goes particularly well because they're sort of at investigation heads. Because Laura is like, you don't have to investigate the crash ship. It's fine. We got this big ceremony to attend. So it's not a big deal that you go down there and check it out. And Una and Pike are like, actually, that's what we do here.
An investigation is not only necessary, it is required.
If somebody comes out and licks shots at us, we are honor bound and code bound to check it out. And so she says, well, if you really must, I'm going to go on the investigation along with you.
I really love how elastic the idea is of the, I want to call them the Magellans, but I don't feel like that's what they call themselves, right?
It's the Magellan system, but the planet is Magellus.
Right.
So I don't know what they call themselves.
Anyway, this idea of them not being Federation citizens is a really elastic concept because it allows Laura to talk pretty frankly about what she does and doesn't want these people from the Federation to do. And it also allows her to participate in Federation stuff like this investigation, where I think ordinarily Pike could be like, you're not invited. Like, you must stay away.
Yeah, there is a diplomatic element to the way that they are interacting.
Right. they don't need to obey each other.
Right.
Given their relationship.
Down in Six Bay, they are working on this little boy who we've come to know as the first servant. And Nurse Chapel and Mbenga are kind of working on him while Elder Kamal stands by and just like absolutely drags the state of their medical technology.
Red beds? Red beds? Really?
That's not surprising considering the state of this abattoir.
I'd be thinking the same thing.
He accuses them of dealing in medievalism. My
God, what is this, the Dark Ages?
Yeah.
He does not want them to use their scalpels on the boy. Instead, he just wants to scan him and leave it at that. Nothing beyond scanning can be done. And he explains that this kid has quantum bio implants.
He has quantum bio implants?
Was it your understanding that these implants were the thing that gave the first servant the Haley Joel Osment affected intelligence vibe? Or did the kid have that before the implants? And that's just what made him special?
I think that it's implied that the implants are healing him and also play some role in the thing that happens to the kid later.
I'm not going to jump to the end too much, but I wanted to know so much more about this technology and how it affected him and how the technology functioned later. We don't know anything really in this scene, and we don't really end up knowing much by the end.
Our founders designed it that way. We don't know why.
Yeah, like, their technology is super advanced and Federation medicine seems very primitive to them. But Elder Kamal explains to the doctor, like, hey, yeah, no, we come from a planet that doesn't have disease. So this abattoir we're in seems like a real freak show to me. And Mbenga's like, no disease, you say?
Yeah.
I am interested in your ideas and would like to subscribe to your newsletter.
We learned a couple of episodes ago that Mbenga is basically in Starfleet to look for a cure for his daughter's disease. And he's got that energy where, like, every time you bring your friend around a new lady who's single, they, like, just are so thirsty, like, throwing themselves at the new person. Like, this is Mbenga's energy anytime there's someone who may have a cure for his daughter, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's thirsty for that cure.
A little bit more understandable in his case than in your weird single friend's case.
Yeah. The Magellan have no disease.
No disease.
Is what Elder Kamal says. Wow.
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 It seems like maybe if you're the Federation, you should probably fast track this planet into membership, right? Because wouldn't that be pretty valuable?
Yeah. What can we do to put you in a Federation today?
There was an entire Star Trek The Next Generation movie about a Fountain of Youth planet.
Yeah.
And there it sits.
Well, of course, I'm tempted. Who wouldn't be?
Go on this away mission on a moon known only as Lockerbie.
Should I feel bad for laughing about that?
Yeah, it's your bad thing, not mine.
Oh, no.
I really like this camera move where you start in the hallway of the ship and they are cutting a hole open in the door, and then you realize that the ship has landed sideways. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be walking in along the walls, and it's La'an and Uhura that go in first to clear the space of danger. And Uhura has a little bit of a fuck up here. She's like going to touch a panel, and at this point in the episode, the first time through, when La'an said the thing about there's Klingon ships that are like rigged to blow if you touch anything, I was like, this is a Klingon ship? What?
Yeah, that was momentarily confusing.
I did not pick up on this being not a Klingon ship for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I felt dumb.
Well, I mean, La'an makes Uhura feel dumb for touching anything.
Yeah.
Because one of the rules of away team is let the tricorder do the talking.
Yeah. So once they've scanned everything and make sure it's all clear, they invite in Spock and Laura, who start kicking through the debris. Spock finds one of those head massagers from Sky Mall catalog.
The kind that give you the tingles, the scalp tingler.
And Laura finds a challenge coin that has been scraped up.
Yeah.
And let me just say, we've sold a lot of challenge coins on tour. And if any friend of DeSoto has fucked up their challenge coin, you're out!
To deface
a sacred symbol. It's forbidden.
If you scraped it up, you're not part of the thing anymore.
Yeah. We have rules about the coins.
She explains that this is like the honor guard of the first servant. Get this coin. There's only a few people that get this coin. It's very, very elite people in their military. And to deface it is a big deal. And nobody's like, well, the ship did crash. Should we consider the possibility that it was defaced just as a part of being a starship falling out of space onto the surface of planet Lockerbie?
There are a number of girders strewn about. One could presume that a girder struck the coin.
Yeah.
No one says that.
No.
What Laura does say is that because the coin was found at the crash site, she's pretty sure that someone involved with the kidnapping is close to her, which puts her in great danger.
It's an inside job.
Yeah. But it's complicated, right? Because while Pike wants to rush in and protect, he can't do it officially. So what Pike proposes is kind of a friends with the Federation with benefits arrangement. And this is something that Laura seems pretty into.
We can have friends, right?
Yeah. She's like, that could work. You could come down to the planet.
Yeah. And on the planet.
The planet looks just like Naboo, Adam. What is going on here?
It is a very steel drum band centric Cloud City motif. Yeah.
It's all these like oldie timey looking buildings that are floating in the air, but then have these like golden tendrils leading down to a lava planet surface.
Hey man, if you don't want me to get a whiff of antebellum vibes, maybe not give Laura like a house servant like this.
Yeah, yeah, it does really feel weighted.
Yeah.
When we see this house servant.
Are we supposed to see it this way?
I don't know. Like, I wonder if that's just like a misfire in casting for diversity. Like, good casting directors are always pushing the producers and directors of their productions to consider, you know, people that are not what has been the default in Hollywood for a million years, which is just like great looking cisgendered white people.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if this is just a misfire. Like, hey, let's give this actress a part in the thing. And because Pike and Laura are super white and she isn't, it reads weird.
I think that's what's going to give us a chance of being blown at an airlock eventually is you get a couple of Lake Arrowhead fours on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With minimal loaf.
All anybody's going to want is for those guys to go into space.
Yeah. Yeah. So Laura in the scene is like, I'm going to get my honor guard together and I'm going to do a coin check.
Ready to shake tree and see what falls out?
Yeah.
Present your coins.
We're going to do a coin check and the camera swings down to the holster at Pike's side and he unbuttons the little gunkeeper strap.
Yeah.
Like he's going to fast draw on one of these guys.
The camera move here is really fun.
Yeah.
I think.
Good.
Yeah.
Up on the ship in Six Bay, Spock shows up and he's like, hey, Kamal, can I talk to you not quite out of earshot of the first servant?
Kids are great at just sitting still with nothing to occupy them. They definitely wouldn't be listening in on your conversation.
And Kamal's like, yeah, man, what's up? What's up? And he's like, have you ever looked at the Hamaker Schlemmer catalog? Elder Kamal.
Since 1848, the first, the best, the only Hamaker Schlemmer.
Star Trek phone. Eat me up.
What he's brought in is a Tupperware with the head massager in it. And he describes it as being kid-sized and something that seems to be designed to mute that quantum implant in the kid's head.
For sale. Kid scalp massager. Never used. So tragic.
Yeah. Yeah. Not something that Kamal can say he's ever seen. So he doesn't really know what's up with it.
The first servant is just aggressively precocious here with Spock.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, you could get the sense that Spock and maybe all Vulcans would have a pretty low amount of patience for precocious kids. But because of what this kid is into, Spock is into talking to the kid quite a bit. He's impressed by him.
The kid is a ham radio nerd.
Yeah.
And Spock is too. So they get along talking about that.
And right now, my only outlet is my ham radio.
The first servant wanted to have a transgalactic pen pal,
mm-hmm.
but hasn't actually accomplished that.
Yeah. No Sarjanka is out there for him to talk to.
She has to be the person she was born to be.
No, nobody has long enough fingers to box with the first servant. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
I mean,
I don't know what I'm saying.
Ensign Shocker might have long enough fingers.
Not far enough away.
Yeah.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell your story, tell the story of what you do, and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What?
What? What?
Sounds like nonsense.
What is going on?
Down on the planet, Laura is doing her inspection. They made such a big deal about Pike getting his gun ready so that it would be ready when they unmasked the baddie. And when they do unmask the baddie, he just stands there with his jaw down. I was like, stun him! Stun this man!
This scene is so kinetic and fun, but the logic of it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're right, because he could be stopped right there. Instead, he's turned loose to just hit people with his staff, shoot people with his staff. And then when he rounds a hedgerow, Pike is seen from like 20 yards away taking a flying tackle at him. This is a guy that's hit and shot a bunch of people with that staff. Why wouldn't he do the same to Pike?
I don't get it. And I don't get why he's like so much tougher than all the other palace guards. Like, why is he able to dominate the rest of them in this way? And then also, like, he runs out. We see like this amazing top down perspective of mm-hmm. the planet with all the like lava flowing and stuff underneath them. And they cut him off. But in the scene where like they go to cut him off, there's a big pan down of a shuttle coming in overhead, which I thought for sure meant that that shuttle was like his pickup and there were going to be more bad guys coming.
But it's just a transition shuttle.
That shuttle has nothing to do with it. It just happened to be flying by.
It busts up the action sequence.
Yeah.
Hey, also, guys, if you're going to have a fight scene at the upper level of a planet on which there's lava below, you got to throw the guy off of the top part into the lava at the bottom at some point, right? This is Chekhov's lava.
You got to tell him he was supposed to be the chosen one.
Pike does not tell this guy that he has had enough of him.
No. It's too bad.
Yeah.
He also tells the guy that he's ready to kill him. He's got his phaser set to not stun. Why wouldn't you have it set to stun? What's the downside of having it set to stun?
I think this is another example of this being a non-Federation member world and Pike knowing he can get away with it. Jesus, Pike.
This guard winds up grabbing Laura and getting a knife to her neck. And she also, unlike the rest of the honor guard, is able to overpower him and gets a knife into his heart.
Turns out they're better off without this honor guard, given how shitty he is at executing someone who he has in the grasp.
No kidding.
This guy, before dying, has some interesting thoughts about his job and place of work, right?
To renounce everything this floating hell stands for.
Yeah.
Hey, honor guard, if you hated your job so much, why didn't you just quit?
Why didn't you resign in protest?
I mean, that's the thing about Magellan. He probably went into debt going to honor guard school.
Right.
And then he became kind of a servant to that debt.
And Laura like implied a lot in the campaign that she was going to forgive student debt. And then it's like, maybe like a tiny, tiny amount of it, but not a lot.
But only for people who went to some other weird college and not honor guard college.
Up on the Enterprise in the mess hall. Are we calling this 10 forward or what?
I'm not sure.
I guess we don't know what deck it's on.
We don't. So I kind of don't want to give it the stolen deck valor of that until we know for sure.
Remember George Kirk, Adam?
Careful, cadet. Remember to chew.
Is Kirk flirting with Uhura or is he shit-talking? I have a hard time telling the difference. In a way that should surprise no one who knows me.
Yeah, that's why people don't like to invite you to parties, Adam.
Yeah.
Or gets around.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure. I feel like whatever gambit he was trying, he didn't get to like fully execute on because he gets interrupted by Lieutenant Noonien Singh, who shows up with a bucket full of computer chips from the crashed ship and gives them to Uhura. And she's like, hey, you're good with languages. Translate all this crap.
It's kind of an off the book situation, right?
Yeah.
Because Uhura's like, hey, why aren't those in the evidence locker? And La'an's like, never checked them in. This is how you get shit done on the ship. If you don't check things into the computer, you can give yourself a nice workaround here.
Lesson 6 of security, know when to bend the rules.
La'an is kind of the Harry Bosch of Star Trek. And, you know, there are rules and sometimes La'an follows them. But when it suits her, she does not.
I used to have a Harry Bosch, but then I got manscaped.
Beep that out. They don't sponsor us anymore.
Back in Six Bay, the first servant has made a complete recovery, which really shouldn't surprise anyone given his implants, right?
Yeah. Those implants, though.
Mabanga's like, hey, what are you doing later? You want to hang out? Talk about what these implants could maybe do for someone with my daughter's condition?
And Kamal's like, I'm busy.
Yeah. This is such a hurtful way to answer Mabanga's question because Kamal's like, yeah, this would work on anyone in any condition. It would just cure them immediately. But because we aren't a member world, no dice.
Yeah, we don't share our technology. I mean, like, it's interesting how asymmetrical the technological advancements are, right? Like, the Federation Starship seems like it is way better than anything that the folks from the Magellan system can wield. Better weapons, better a lot of things, but their medicine is just Stone Age compared to what Kamal is used to.
If we knew Mabanga less, or not at all, I think both of us would suspect that Elder Kamal would be in great danger here, right? Because what wouldn't a desperate person do to save the life of their child? But I think we've had 5 episodes giving us little glimpses of Mabanga's goodness, his inherent goodness.
Yeah.
Even though he covered up the idea of his daughter being in the pattern buffer.
But he's like a gentle soul. Like, it was really hard for him to talk to Hemmer when Hemmer was messing with the thing.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's kind of a magic trick that, like, I think a lot of shows would load up the scene with uh-oh, is Mbenga going for a scalpel? Like, like, what's going to happen here?
You called this place an abattoir, and now this?
It's funny, like, there's desperation, and then there's, like, the threshold of desperation that veers into, like, real danger for other people.
Right.
Never get that feeling here, yeah. Or the entire episode, really.
You don't. Down on the planet, you do get a different feeling,
mm-hmm.
which is that Laura wants that booty. Wants to get Pike out of that gold shirt.
I love how this scene is blocked, right? Because this is, they've been on a very exciting date and they're at the doorway.
Yeah.
And are they going to go inside? Is she going to ask him? Is he going to ask her?
She's like, hey, you want a cup of coffee? And he's like, no, that'll keep me up. And he walks away.
Coffee's not coffee. Coffee is sex.
I want to know more about this decision for Anson Mount to put his hand up on the door the entire time. I thought that was such an unusual pose.
Yeah, but it's like a high school boy kicking it to a girl at the lockers, you know?
This is my point. It's like a forced casualness that a nervous person can sometimes tend toward, right?
Yeah.
And I'm projecting myself as being cool, but I'm really a little bit nervous for what's about to happen.
Yeah, is this going down? Are we in? Are we out?
It's nervous burlesque is what it is. And it doesn't take long for Pike to get invited in.
You could come in with me instead.
Yeah, they start smooching. We cut to a shot of the Enterprise going into a wormhole.
And really waiting longer than you'd think in order to fire the phasers. Like the wormhole, I mean, is it a wormhole or is it a pulsar? Whatever it is, it's glowing and shooting.
Oh, man. Really embarrassing when you think you're flying your ship into a wormhole and you accidentally fly into the pulsar.
I wish there was a more suggestive elliptical edit. As it is, it's just an elliptical sexual edit until later. And Laura has got that bed that you usually only encounter in a honeymoon suite, and it's not pushed up against a wall.
Yeah, just right out in the middle.
Do you think you could sleep in a bed that was in the middle of a room?
Oh, man.
I feel like there's something inherently, like, instinctual about human beings needing a wall behind their heads.
Yeah, feng shui, like, totally forbids this kind of shit.
But maybe that's what that bed is for. That bed isn't for sleeping, Ben.
It's almost, I mean, like when it's a round bed and it's pulled away from the wall, it almost has an arena vibe, like a theater in the round.
Yeah.
Gather as Alora and Pike do diplomacy.
Alora's got a latex spiky bird.
She got the D that she wanted. Pike opens up a little bit about the accident that he's in for in the future.
I don't know, Pike. This kind of throws cold water in the middle of this hot bed, right?
Yeah.
Maybe try not to steer the conversation into traumatic death vision.
Sometimes a refractory period be like that, though.
You know, when you hit the button on your rubber spiky bird to turn it off. Or to change its vibration settings. It did make a beep that was a little familiar to me in a way I'm about to tell you.
Yeah. So the tantalizing promise that she makes is like, hey, if you come live post the accident, if you come live like us, there's really no medical problem that we can't solve here on Magellus. So, you know, just something to think about for the future.
This was really interesting to me because at first I was like, there is no fucking way Pike is going to take her up on this deal. But then I thought about the very first episode this season and I was like, Pike was super content to live in Kirk's cabin making Katarian eggs and fucking the stray captain that wandered through every once in a while. Like, he doesn't need this shit. He would totally take her up on that offer.
I think so. Yeah. Until he finds out the disgusting truth. But
yeah.
He hasn't found that out yet.
He needs that rubber spiky bird to have a clicker for quiet mode, like no beeps.
Right. Yeah.
That's a condition of his sexual attendance.
Yeah. Up on the ship, Uhura has finished her assignment and she has translated all of those computer chips. And not only that, like She's like in the middle of explaining what she's done, and La'an is like, so you did basically the bare minimum? And she's like, I hadn't like ended the sentence. I'd ended a clause. What are you doing? God. I'm in the middle of talking you through all the discoveries I made. What about what I'm saying led you to believe that I had concluded my thoughts?
La'an has some personal character flaws that are a little too familiar to me. In a way that, in totality, started to make me feel a little bad.
So what they've discovered is a big deal, but it's kind of only implied in this scene. We don't get to find out about it until later.
But La'an is doing that good manager thing where she's like, hey, I'm not going to bring this to the captain. This is your great thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to share the credit with you.
It's your work. You should present it.
You know, that's exactly what I've been telling him. Thank God he's finally listening to me.
Do you think that that's just La'an, like, kind of undoing the bad thing that she did earlier?
Maybe, but I also think there is a quality to the show that sort of thrusts Uhura into the middle of it and makes this show kind of her story, like, in a through line kind of way. We're meeting all the characters through Uhura. We're learning about the different jobs on the ship through her.
She's kind of our proxy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really great point.
Back in Six Bay, Mbenga hears the sound of children laughing, which is a sound very foreign to Six Bay, to him. And behind a door, he finds his daughter playing with the first servant. They're playing Noble Gas Hopscotch.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hope you're not mad.
It's cool that he made an invention. We're lucky he didn't make an invention that creates a force field and then get super drunk.
How did you do that?
Hey, Mbenga, you're kind of cultivating a reputation for being a little bit of a stern father.
Yeah.
Because he brought an entire bowl of waffles into this area and, like, does not give any of the waffles to the kids. Are those his waffles?
Madam, we must have waffles.
Those waffles for you?
Are those special medical waffles?
We must all have waffles forthwith.
It's a touching scene. The little daughter is, like, you know, sad to have to stop because she was having fun, but I guess she's not allowed to exert herself given the condition that she has.
It feels very sad.
Yeah.
When Mbenga has to beam his daughter away. And then Mbenga does that thing where he tells a kid to keep a secret for him when Kamal enters and
pulling in a kid into the like cone of secrecy is risky as fuck.
Boy, oh boy. Do we have a drop for that?
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Yeah, Kamal is mad that the first servant was snooping, so he walks out. And when Pike returns to the bridge, he's like getting the info from Uhura about what these computer chips represent. They're from Prospect 7, which is the colony mentioned before, but it's not an alien colony. It's actually a Magellan colony. So they were lying the whole time. And that's when they're interrupted by Mbenga saying that Kamal and the kiddo have marched out of Six Bay and are trying to go back to the planet.
I feel like Pike's skepticism as a quality of his character is a part of a bunch of different scenes, right? He's skeptical about how the Magellans live their lives. He's also very skeptical about the evidence being presented to him about these Prospect 7 people and the excuses that Laura has given him about what happened during the space battle from earlier. Like, things aren't adding up, and a lot of different people are trying to tell Pike that she's not good for him. And he's like, you don't know her like I do.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I saved her from a pulsar, you guys.
She makes great coffee.
Yeah.
There must be a reasonable explanation for this.
So they march down to the transporter room and are saying, like, we're not beaming you away, when they beam away. And it's just kind of a surprise beam out. And then just Kamal surprise beams back.
Yeah.
And it seems pretty clear that the kid has been abducted.
Yeah. Pike and Lieutenant Kyle really get into it, which kind of supports the Lieutenant Kyle is a son of a bitch kind of theory that's floating around the ship, right?
Yeah, yeah. Kyle making a lot of excuses, not seeing a lot of solutions.
Who told you you could beam them out?
No, it wasn't me, Captain. Someone else must have locked onto their signals while our shields were down.
Where did the kid go, Ben? He went to the combat ship that they just picked up outside.
Yeah.
Where'd that guy come from?
Sneaky little fucker.
Yeah.
And finally, the ship demonstrates that it does, in fact, have a tractor beam. They tractor onto this ship, trying to stop it getting away. But the ship goes to warp, and Lieutenant Mitchell.
Now, Mitchell.
She fucks up. And that ship blows up. It blows big. And that seems like the little kiddo that they were abducting on that ship is dead. And we do one of our classic cut around the bridges in Star Trek. First to Lieutenant Mitchell, whose fault it is. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, a bunch of other people. And finally, Elder Kamal, who is just swimming. He is like completely stunned that this has happened.
Yeah, he's feeling it. We cut directly into commercial and out of commercial for the aftermath where Pike is trying to soothe Laura. But he doesn't really have the tools to empathize because he doesn't understand.
Nobody's really explained what this kid's deal is. Like, it's sort of been implied that he's like going to be some kind of political figure is all you can surmise at this point.
But there's like a magical space kid quality to him too. Like, there's a spiritual element injected here that I think is the reason for Pike's, I don't want to say insincerity, but there's something about how he tries to comfort Laura that feels just like he's not really giving it all of the energy.
It's a tragedy, and I understand the symbolic significance, but...
You don't understand.
It's not adequate because it's like, it seems like a sad tragedy to him, but to her, it's like our whole fucking society is going to fall apart now because of your fuck up.
Right, and no one knew the stakes because she's like, you don't understand, Cloud City, the floor is lava underneath Cloud City, and we're all about to fall off the couch.
And Pike is like, are you taking this call from your bedroom?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, it's the one set we have here. It's that an antebellum staircase.
Kamal is not permitted to grieve very long because he's pulled into a ready room where Uhura's accusations are leveled at him personally, that he was involved in the transport from earlier. It wasn't Lieutenant Kyle at all.
No.
Lieutenant Kyle should be at this meeting, by the way.
Yeah, getting exonerated.
Yeah.
Also, I'm pretty good at managing subordinates, just for the record. And they're like,
Lieutenant Kyle's such an asshole that no one's interested in making him feel better. You know what? Just let him stew on this for a while.
Yeah. So what happened was Kamal used the sensors in sixbay to get transporter patterns for himself and the kid. So it seems like he was involved in the kidjacking.
Oh, I don't like that term.
It's when you hijack a kid.
Oh, okay.
Why? Where'd your mind go, Adam?
Nowhere.
Oh, okay. Good. The interrogation feels like it is leading to Kamal explaining a bunch of crucial information that will help them understand what's going on.
Right.
When Spock radios in to interrupt and, man... This is one of those script moments where you're just like, didn't work. Seemed like that was more important than whatever Spock was doing.
Yeah.
Like, what Spock's doing is important, but we need context. Like, the last phone call we had with Laura was so confusing. Let's get this guy's perspective on what's going on.
Yeah. This is cut for us.
Yeah.
To obscure what's happening.
What Spock has discovered is that there is a subspace frequency using this kid's ham radio license, and... they are down in a hallway that seems to have like become overflow for cargo. Like maybe they don't have a good cargo bay set yet on the show. So they're just throwing cargo pods into a hallway.
Yeah, they really need to tidy up this area of the ship.
They do. They find a cargo pod and open it up. And there is the first servant who's created his own LoJack, and he's like,
I need to get to the Ascension.
The party is starting. I need to be there. It's very, very important.
Yeah. When we see the party, we can kind of understand why. It is off the hook.
Yeah, these people really know how to cut loose.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a smoke show.
Yeah. There's a lot of like waving and confetti and fronds. Fronds of all different descriptions.
Yeah, it is really a science fiction party in that way.
Where do you think all these costumes come from? Like, is this like Ren Faire costumes that they like added some beeps and boops to make look a little bit spacey?
Sure seems that way.
They didn't make all of these, right? They must be renting them in.
You'd think. But so many people are shot wide, you know?
Yeah,
like, you don't get details on a lot of it. It could be like Halloween costume amount of detail up close.
Yeah. It's definitely like some digital crowd creation
in
the wide shots. So, yeah, the conversation between Pike and Laura in the crowd is a little bit icy.
You still haven't explained how the fate of your planet could rest on the head of this child.
It's complicated.
He is starting to get a little bit preoccupied with all of the remaining unanswered mysteries about why this kid is so important to the ongoing existence of their society and, you know, why Kamal seems to have been in league with the people that wanted to steal him when he was the primary caretaker of this kid. All of these questions remain unanswered at this point, and it almost seems like he's gonna like ruin the party the way he's asking her them.
Yeah, you don't want to go into the ascension with this kind of energy, right?
No,
you won't be able to ascend when you're preoccupied.
Yeah,
I mean, the best you could probably do is like a quarter or a half ascension.
Yeah,
and you got to rely on other things.
The officiant says, if there's anybody here with any reason that this child should not ascend, speak now or forever hold your peace. Pike starts talking and everybody's like, dude, come on. They never actually mean that.
I feel like they set up Pike to say thanks, but no thanks. But then the littlest ascender invites Pike personally.
I want you to be there when I ascend.
And he's like, oh, what am I going to do? Like, I can't say no to him.
Yeah. He gets invited to the Holy of Holies. And this is like happening while we're cutting back up to the ship and Una is interrogating Kamal in the brig. And Kamal is explaining that like he was doing this to save the life of his child.
Yeah. Yeah. And the spine tingler that Spock found was a device used to make the kid unsuitable for his duties. So it was like kind of a brain melter. Or would it have taken the implants out? What was your take about what it was meant to do?
I think the implants have something to do with the interface that we see later. So this thing would have like wrecked the implant in a way that would have, you know, made them have to find a different kid.
Yeah.
We're down in the chamber, the holy chamber. Una can't get on the radio to Pike because there's some kind of scattering field. No way to beam down.
You're saying there's no way to contact the captain exactly when I need to talk to him?
Yeah, that's suspicious, right?
Yeah.
At this exact moment?
Yeah, weird.
These ascension caves, Ben, need better cable management. I saw all these glowing cables around, and I'm like, you got to wind those up properly. You got to put some of those bridges over the top so they don't trip.
Looks like what happens after my wife unplugs our car.
Maybe tape them down.
Just coil it up. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the creepy stuff starts.
Yeah.
It's just like pictures in a book, Annie. It isn't real.
They start carrying away the previous kid who... We get a close-up of dead kid face in this episode that I could have done without personally.
Why was the dead kid so strange-looking? Like, he didn't even look like he was of the same species as the littlest ascender.
I mean, it looked like a famine photo, you know?
Oh, right. Like
the sunken cheeks and the...
Yeah. Like he was drained.
Yeah. I mean, it was really upsetting.
The music is straight out of Conspiracy, and the expression that Pike has is straight out of Conspiracy. Like it is horror faces.
Yeah.
And even like the littlest ascender has a moment here where he's like, oh, this is actually going to be pretty shitty for me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it seems like the kid knows what he's in for, but this is like...
But not to the extent where he asks Pike for help. Like, Pike's instinct to help is not motivated by him begging for it.
No, like, this kid is known, and it's just seeing the practical upshot of it for the first time that is giving him pause. But he, like, walks up and gets on the clip show throne by himself.
They don't even clean the throne before this kid gets on it. That was the thing that grossed me out, Ben.
Yeah, kind of rusty looking.
Ugh.
So he gets in it, and like Pike is Star Trek fighting these honor guards while the clip show device connects to the kid.
All the headbutts in the world can't free the littlest descender from his fate.
Yeah. And Pike runs up there to try and get him out of it, but he gets KO'd by, you know, one of these bow staffs to the head.
Yeah.
And he wakes up with Laura looking over him in her weird round bed. And he's like, really? Not a hospital? What do you not do in here?
I'm almost positive that you shouldn't have let me fall asleep. That's kind of like the number one rule of head injuries.
Yeah, yeah.
There is quite a sense of helplessness here. And it's not just because the guards are outside the door. It's that the ascension is happening and it's complete. And there's really nothing that Pike could do. Even if he could get into the chamber, unplugging the kid would kill him.
Yeah. So what we've understood now is that the kid is some kind of child's brain-based energy system that keeps all the buildings floating above all the acid and lava on the surface of their planet. They would love to do this without murdering a child every time, but that's just how they gotta do it.
Without him, Majalis could not be.
You plugged a kid into a machine.
She kind of makes the case for the needs of the many at Pike here in a way that made me wonder how differently Spock would have interpreted her words in that same position. You know, like, there is horror here at this realization, but
yeah.
What is also horrible about this scene is how Laura doesn't really know how things work, and no one does. All they know is that they need to keep doing this so that they don't fall into the lava. And that's maybe the most horrible fact of all.
Their ancestors created this system and they just are stuck with it.
Right. It's entering the code in Lost.
Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
You don't know why you're doing it. You just know you need to do it.
Yeah. They get into a part of the conversation where she's like, can you honestly say that no child suffers for the benefit of the Federation? And I was like, isn't that kind of the point of the Federation? Is that like it's...
You try to stop it.
Yeah.
Like... That's the difference. It's the effort.
She's like, hey, you know, like, at least we're honest, is kind of her rationalization. And Pike is like, we're not, like, happy that kids are suffering. We're not looking the other way. Like, the Federation is about, like, reducing suffering. That's, like, one of its primary goals.
I think one of the strengths of this episode is its anti-conclusions, right?
Yeah.
Because Pike basically hangs up on her in real life by beaming away. And then we get a button in Six Bay where Kamal is like, hey, you know, before I go to Prospect 7, I'm going to hip you to a few of the medical advancements that our people have come up with. And maybe you can use this on the girl in the transport buffer. And that is as close as we get to a positive feeling resolution, because the real final scene in the episode is in Pike's quarters where he's having a brown liquor and window kind of night. And there's no brass instruments here. And there's no dialogue. It's just a guy alone looking out a window. And this is how the episode ends, without resolution.
Without rescued kid.
I want to know if we're hanging off of a cliff. Is this a cliffhanger, or is this how the story ends here?
Is the first servant a cliff kid?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need to wait until the next episode for an answer to this question, Ben. Did you like this episode?
There's a lot I liked about this episode. I feel like this might be a tough review to summarize because I do feel really complicated about this episode, and I feel like good art will, you know, evoke that kind of reaction in the viewer. But there are definitely very uneven parts of the script and a lot of like, hey, this guy didn't say this one thing in this scene. Like the rhetorical equivalent of clickbait where it's like, if you knew this one thing,
mm-hmm.
the episode would go super differently.
Right.
And, I mean, I understand why the Magellans are secretive about the way their paradise planet works, but...
Secret yet prideful.
Secretive yet prideful, yeah. Like, another thing that I sort of wish had been given voice to in that final scene between Laura and Pike, he could have just said, like, if you're so sure that this is the best way to run your planet, why has it been this huge fucking secret from the rest of the galaxy forever? Like, I have to go back and tell Starfleet how you guys roll now. And that was not what you wanted initially.
Yeah.
So I ship Prospect 7 becoming members of the Federation. That would be great.
Mm.
But yeah, it's going to take a while for me to like know my full opinion on this one, because I feel like there were some really strong themes, and I love an episode taking a swing at an ending as sad and ambiguous as this. But I feel like it fell short of voicing some of the interesting ideas it implies, which is unfortunate.
I think for my part, I appreciated in centering Pike in the story. I think he's uniquely able to like demonstrate a lot of mixed emotions about his circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought like he was a very good vessel for that.
Yeah.
In the story. Like, he is a very feeling captain. And so we feel it when it's good or exciting or horrifying, the entire ep, in a really useful way. I think it should be more common that alien cultures are just fucking confusing.
Yeah.
And the conclusions we draw about experiencing those cultures are messy and incomplete. And maybe this could be totally wrong by the time we neatly tie up this story in the next episode or not. But I like how this episode ended with it kind of hanging, like someone thinking about how fucked up their day was, not really knowing what is going to happen next, feeling powerless about the situation and how to fix it or save some lives if that were possible to do, feeling double-crossed by a lady friend he thought he was on the level with but isn't. Like,
yeah.
I love the ball of conflict at the very end and the very last frame of this one. And it feels like it should be more commonplace to not understand a culture from a different civilization. And in a way that was as alien feeling as this episode made it seem. Like, you think you know why they're not giving you the whole story, but like, you have no idea. And by the time you do know, like, you're going to wish you didn't.
Yeah, true.
And so in that way, I thought it was just like a good science fiction story told in the Star Trek universe. It felt like that. It felt like a book you might have read.
Yeah.
Before.
Probably. I probably read it, but I forgot it.
Yeah.
Adam, do you want to see if there's anything memorable in the Priority One inbox?
I hope so.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Our first Priority One message is from Cage Prime and also Nancy, and it's to Zed. Yo, dude! Remember driving up to that shitty job in Roseville way back in 2016, and I was like, hey, I've been listening to this dick and fart joke Star Trek podcast and played the Best of Both Worlds episode for you. And here we are now. Happy birthday, man. I'm looking forward to going to the Double Dumbass Tour at Sketchfest 2023 with you.
Wow.
Cool. Cage Prime and Zed rolling through to the Sketchfest show we got coming up in February.
We'll see you there. There may or may not be 4 tickets left to that show. Like, as far as I know, that show is permanently sold out, but
maybe they'll move it into a bigger venue and just keep selling them. Who knows?
Yeah.
Keep your eyes on it.
Let's just double up Cobbs. That place rules.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, thank you for putting the word out also, Cage Prime. That's that is really great.
It's double duty.
And thanks for coming over here to Greatest Discovery while you were at it.
Yeah. Ben, our second Priority One message is from Matt in West Virginia. It's to Ben and Adam. The message goes like this. Dear Ben and Adam, you're going to a conference. Knowing what always happens, I'm curious, what kind of Star Trek conference is worth that risk to each of you? In what ship do you travel there, and with what Star Trek weapon do you strap up in advance of the inevitable dustbuster battle?
Wow.
Love, your friendly Fed, who thinks about these things, Matt. Oh, we know Matt in West Virginia.
Yeah, Matt is a friendly Fed in West Virginia who's given us some patches and challenge coins in the past. Great friend of DeSoto. I think that if I was going to a Star Trek conference, I would definitely not want it to be a peace conference at Kittimer.
Ruling that one out, huh?
I don't know what like the opposite end of the spectrum is in terms of conferences in Star Trek, but peace conference at Kittimer seems like real fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, they're all fucked up, but I'm trying to run in the opposite direction of that.
So much so that it's like a metaphorical shorthand for a fucked up situation. Like, yeah, date started off great, and then I went back to her place and it was a real peace conference at Kittimer kind of situation.
You mean it ended with a slow clap?
Yeah, it ended somehow with me jumping off of a springboard into another person.
I guess the ship I want to take is the USS Hood, because I always want to be on the USS Hood. And if I'm going strapped, I'm taking wide beam dustbuster, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When you absolutely have to stun every motherfucker in the room, except no substitutes.
I mean, knowing how dangerous conferences are, I think I would become even more of a homebody than I usually am. I wouldn't go to many, which means the one conference I would go to would have to be fucking great. It would have to be in the best place we'd ever heard of, the place with the most fun reputation. It'd have to be RISA for me.
Wow.
Conference on RISA would be the only draw. The Hood is the right answer. The Hood's the only answer, really.
Only answer there is.
Yeah. And then the weapon that I strap up with, God, I don't know. Pike's phaser with the leather.
I mean, if you're going to a RISA, the weapon you need is a Horgon, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a melee weapon. Horgon as melee weapon is the answer to that question. So there you go.
I dig it. Wow. Well, if you'd like to get a Priority One message on the show, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set it up today.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself in Edward Larkin?
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it to Una Chin Reilly for that eyes acting that she does in the scene when Laura first beams up. She was really cracking me up in this episode. I feel like she gets a lot to do in this episode, despite being probably like fifth or sixth on the call sheet for it. You know, she's like got fewer things to do than Uhura or any of the extras or Pike, but she does a lot. And there's such a funny dynamic when your captain and first officer are, you know, presumed straight and both beautiful people of the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. But they like clearly do not have a romantic element to their relationship. It's all
right
business between them. And so she just gets to be a fly on the wall when Pike turns into a stuttering middle schooler in front of a beautiful babe. And I thought she just made that scene so fun and so much more interesting to watch, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my Edward Larkin.
My Edward Larkin is the scene partner there. It's going to be Captain Pike.
Wow.
I think it's hard not to ham and cheese up a scene like this.
Yeah.
And I don't think Anson Mount does. I think he is plausibly awkward here in a really fun way.
True.
In a way that's effective. In a way that, like, it's got to be so easy to be so cheese. And it just isn't.
Yeah.
It works. It works in a number of scenes, and it's not just this one.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. Up to and including the bedroom scene where Captain Pike joins the Jim Shimoda group, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
First shirt off scene for Anson Mount.
Looking good.
Super fucking jacked.
Yeah.
If we meet up with Anson Mount again, I need to bring him a Jim Shimoda shirt.
That would be great.
As a gift.
That would be really fun.
Yeah. He'd probably cut the sleeves off or something.
As is his right.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about the next episode in credits to this episode. They have been really good about getting us screeners so far. So let's throw to the credits and get out of here. What do you say, Adam?
Oh, I already left. I had to come back to the mic just to say that.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You really just hated every minute of being on mic with me, didn't you?
Not at all. Another great episode.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, bye, everybody.
Maybe the best we've ever done.
Oh, cool. Great. Damning with faint praise.
The next episode of Strange New Worlds is called The Serene Squall. While on a dangerous humanitarian mission, the USS Enterprise stumbles into a harrowing game of leverage with the Quadrant's deadliest space pirate. The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Big thanks to Adam Ragusea, who composed all of the original music that you hear on this show. We recommend that you check out both his podcast and his YouTube cooking channel. And thank you to Bill Tilley, who does a great job with all of the social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Make sure you're following us on Instagram and Twitter at Greatest Trek, and use the hashtag Greatest Discovery when you post about the show online. You can support the ongoing production of these shows with a monthly gift at MaximumFun.org/join, and we really appreciate everybody who's already doing that. You can also rate or review the show, or even just recommend it to someone who you think might enjoy it. That really helps us grow. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.